love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented Tony.
Take him away, boys.
Hey, I'm the chief here. Take him away, toys.
What'd you say, chief?
Do what the kid says.
Alex.
Hi, guys.
And Dave.
Guys, come on, let's do it, Let's all do it together. Moose.
Winner of the Cruiserweight Classic right there.
Elk.
What are you saying, Elk there, Dave?
I'm telling you, they're going to call him Bull, and they're just going to take Bull Dempsey at great music.
But the thing is, in NXT, the crowd's just going to call say Moose the whole time.
I know,
no,
I brought that back.
No, they're not.
Dave.
They're not. You don't watch NXT. The NXT crowd, they will go along with whatever. They will boo the heels. They will cheer the faces. If somebody gets a new name, they'll chant their new name because they want the product to succeed. They are invested in that product doing well, so they go along with what they're given, except for Eva Marie. They boo the shit out of her. She's a bridge too far, as they say.
Okay, let's start the show out proper. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to the latest edition of Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. If you listen on iTunes, please leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Alex and Dave. Alex, how are you doing today?
Raising hell, drinking beer.
Hopefully not beating Deborah.
Beating Deborah.
Nice.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Ready to bust some heads, man.
Oh, yeah. Moose.
Tonight. Yay.
Yeah, I told him I'd watch it with him.
Ooh,
I'll
nice.
Probably watch it for like 15 minutes.
Tomorrow is stacked. Tomorrow we got AJ versus Cena. We got the Warriors versus the Cavs. And we got Bolton versus Snow.
I'm sure.
I'm only watching one of those because I'm not caught up on Game of Thrones and fuck basketball.
I'm sure the people listening to us on Wednesday are going to be like, that already happened, Dave. You're an idiot.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
I'm sure it would have been great, but you guys keep forgetting this.
Snow's going to win.
Late flip.
Let's see. Maybe. And with this on the record now, we can see if you guys were right or not.
Prediction. Snow's going to win. He has to. He already died once.
Yeah.
Bolton's a prick.
Babyface.
He's gonna nice.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Cavs win the NBA title, although it'll probably look like a Wednesday.
All right, with that out of the way, let's go into our first segment, news. It's been a while since we've actually done news. Let's open up with our first news story. The Dead No More title has been changed. It is now Clone Conspiracy. Now, we are referring to do this, the new Spider-Man story, or the new Spider-Man. It's not really a crossover because there's really a crossover in any other book aside from Spider-Man.
It's a limited series.
There you go.
Outside,
thank you.
Yeah, sort of.
But it is crossing over in the Amazing Spider-Man series.
Well, I assume it's a limited series that will have repercussions.
Oh, yes. Long-standing effects.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Octopus is going to have a body again.
Yeah, there you go. That's how he's going to have another body.
Yeah.
Perfect.
A clone.
Clone body.
It's fine. They brought the Jackal back. We haven't seen him in a while. It's all right.
There's a reason for that.
We did see him in a book not that... I think it was during, was it Infinity or was, I think it was Infinity. Remember there was like a one-off?
Yeah, it was that Scarlet Spider book I got you guys to read. He was in that.
Yeah, he was in that book and I was like, this is strange. Why is he in a book? And then he mentioned about he has some plans, but we never got a follow-up. I guess we finally getting a follow-up.
Maybe
in, the post-Secret Wars Marvel, the Clone Saga never happened.
That'd be great.
Possibly, they're undoing Dead No More. I know that I've been reading something about that. One More Day. I mean,
that's actually the big rumor, and that one's kind of big because they've been like teasing Peter and Mary Jane. They did in Spider-Man.
Yeah, was that the book where they're like, "Yeah, remember we lived in Stark Tower together"?
Oh yeah, and Tony just doesn't remember. He's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Well, here's the thing with that, and why it makes sense. The reason Peter was no longer married to his supermodel wife is because they said that wasn't relatable and like kids couldn't relate to it, him having a wife and stuff. But now you have a younger Spider-Man, you have Miles. So there's no reason not to have Peter be married and have a family or whatever. I mean, they're doing it with Superman, so.
Yeah, and then they also have that out-of-continuity Spider-Man book, Spidey, so they can have their cake and eat it, too.
Yeah, but I just mean, you know, if you want the dichotomy, you have it. You have the young, single Miles Morales, and then you can have the older, married, run company Peter Parker, and that'd be fine. Everyone would be happy.
Yeah, so it's a 5-issue miniseries. It starts in issue 16 of Spider-Man, and it runs through issue 23 of Amazing Spider-Man. So it's being co-written by Christian Cage. So I'm not sure, or Christian
the
Cage.
The wrestler?
No, Christian Cage. I said that wrong.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's probably why I said it. It looks, you know, it looked deceiving.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
Isn't it Christos Gage or something?
Christos Gage is his name.
Ah, there you go.
Or Christo?
I wonder
if he's writing this or Slott's writing this.
The crossover.
If I had to guess, with two writers, he's scripting and Slott is plotting.
Okay.
It's usually how it goes.
I wonder if this is their way of getting Slott off the title.
No, he's probably never leaving that book. He's going to be writing it in like 20 years. He's going to be Spider-Man's Claremont, except he actually resolves storylines.
Okay. Since we're talking all things crossover, and now that we're reading DC books, let's talk about the first crossover since DC Rebirth we are having. Let's see if I can look at the name right here. God, it was on the tip of my tongue. Monster Men. Now, Dave was telling me that didn't this something like this before in the past?
Yeah, it was like a limited series in 2006. It was called Batman and the Monster Men. I read this story. It's like, it's an adaption of an early Hugo Strange story from Batman number one from like back in the day. And it takes place between Batman Year One and The Man Who Laughs.
It had a really bad name. Batman and the Monster Men.
This one's being called Night of the Monster Men. And it kicks off in September 21st in Batman issue 7.
We'll be reading that.
Yeah,
at
it's
least.
Being written by obviously by the name of Steve Orlando. There we go.
Wait, Tom King's not writing it?
He's co-writing all the writer Steve Orlando is co-writing all the crossovers he's in. So obviously Tom King is still writing the book, but he's co-writing it with Steve Orlando.
Oh, well, it'll be wrapped up quick because Batman comes out every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it's going to be crossing over in Nightwing as well, Detective Comics, so.
All right.
So, it's something to look forward to now that we're reading a lot of DC. This is something to keep an eye out for.
Hugo Strange, or?
No details on the details of the storyline, but that's all I've been given so far. It might be, but who's to say it won't be as well?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our final segment of news. Let's talk comic sales. All right, the following are the sales for May 2016. And at number one is DC Rebirth number one at $2.99. Here's the final number. 235,000 units sold.
That's good, but I have to imagine that's a disappointment given the price point.
Yeah, it's a $2.99 book. And it was like a triple-sized book, wasn't it?
Now, the thing is, it's been proven in the past price has no bearing on how well a comic sells.
If folks want it, they're going to pay whatever they want.
Yeah, like I bet if it was $5, it would have sold exactly the same.
And here's an interesting thing. It's sold out of all the copies that they were selling to stores, and stores are ordering a second batch, but the thing is, the reprints are going to be charged at full price at $6.99.
That's hilarious.
What?
Yeah.
Well, they had their chance to get it for a good price.
Yeah, they're charging like what would presumably be a retail book for what 40, 50 pages?
Well, it's really easy to explain what happened. That book came out and universally it was liked. Mm-hmm. Like didn't get any bad write-ups. So word of mouth was really good, so the people who didn't get to buy it, now they can re-release it, they can jack up the price. You make some money.
I think this is the thing going forward, because I'm looking at icv2.com, and they have a story that comic book stores shouldn't be ordering a lot, because when they do have reprints, they're going to be charging more for the reprints. So they're still going to be charging $2.99 for most of their books, but if they do a reprint, they're going to charge more in the future.
And the only reason you reprint a book is if demand outstrips supply. So that makes sense. You're you're gouging people who didn't buy it when it came out, as they should have. Mm-hmm. And people who are too stupid to buy digitally because they have to collect. Here's a pro tip, guys. It sold 250,000 copies. It's never going to be worth anything.
No, but I bought it because I wanted to own a physical copy of it. Just for whatever, for lulz. I'm not going out there and collecting this and having a full run of it.
You're not going to get it graded.
No.
And have it in a plastic case.
But let's put it this way. If a buddy of mine's hearing about DC Rebirth, I could tell him to download the book digitally, but who's to say if I actually do it? If I actually go there and give him a copy of it, there's more of a chance he'll actually read it.
I guess, but it's not your job to advertise. What was number two?
Number two was, oddly enough, Civil War II. Zero. Issue zero. At
okay, here's something we need.
And that was a $5 book.
Here's something we need to talk about. The momentum in comics has completely shifted in DC's favor.
Well, I think just overall momentum in the industry is down because there's some notes as far as these numbers are concerned. There's a 14% decline in dollar sales of comic books of May 2015 and now.
Well, however, had DC Rebirth been a $5 book instead of a $3 book, you would have seen a difference in the dollar amount. The top-selling book by far was a cheaper book than the average.
Yeah, but it's one of those things in business where they'll call it a loss leader, to where they're willing to take it on the chin for book with the idea that they're going to make that money up back when everybody decides to read all the other books.
And I'll be interested to see how well a lot of these books sell, but I mean, just the thing of it is, everybody's talking about DC right now. No one's talking about Marvel. I think Marvel kind of shit the bed a little bit with Secret Wars because they, in all honesty, they did this big storyline that went on forever and really not that much changed.
And really, I'm looking at the numbers here. Civil War II isn't even touching Secret Wars. And Secret Wars didn't exactly set the world on fire.
No, it did good, though, given how long it was.
What do you mean it didn't set the world on fire? Remember the first issue sold nearly a million, and then it was averaging like 300,000?
Yeah, true. You bring up a good point there, Dave.
I enjoyed Secret Wars. That was all fine, but really all that came out of it was Doctor Strange has a book and Miles is in the 616.
But we kind of knew that going in once they blew up the continuity and we saw
we got new Avengers teams, I guess.
Yeah, we saw the solicitations and it's like, oh, okay, everything's going to go back to normal. They said they're blowing up their continuity, but really it's just coming back in a different way.
Yeah, they didn't change much. And I think that, with DC, that thing I made fun of with the 2-year-long storyline is going to run through all the books. I think that actually has turned out to be a big strength because it gives you a reason to get invested and continue reading.
They have a direction.
Yeah, they have a direction. They're building. It's like pro wrestling. They're taking 3 months to build up to WrestleMania. And during that period of time, the comics are great. And you can tell little side stories while it's going on, but you're always going to have that one big story in the background, and you want to see how it shakes out. It's a smart way to do it. Marvel right now, they don't really have that, like, because they go from crossover to crossover to crossover with such speed that it doesn't really mean anything. I hope DC holds off for a bit on doing that, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, who's to say? It's one of those things to where I'm sure Marvel is sick of doing crossovers as well, but when you look at the numbers, how it sells, they can't help but do it.
Yeah, because Civil War still sells better. Crossovers are almost always going to sell. I mean, there was a time in the past when that backfired and they did it too much, and you know, every 4 months there was another big crossover that ran through every title, and people just got sick of it and it stopped working. But you know, for now, it's still working okay.
Okay, and for this next book, Alex, you may want to take off your pants for this. At number three, Punisher issue one at 110,000 copies.
Well, he hasn't had a book in about 3 months, so.
I think it's mainly coming off of he was on that Daredevil show. And folks are.
It's also a number one. That's a lot of it too.
Yeah, it's a number one, but it's a number one selling it. The third highest selling comic. So, yeah, Punisher is, it had Steve Dillon doing the art, so it reminded people of the Ennis run. So that helps.
Okay, and at number four, we have Batman 52 at 102,000 copies. And number five, I'm surprised this wasn't higher, but then again, I'm not sure if they were coordinating with the comic book stores, considering the, bombshell that was in this book, but Captain America Steve Rogers at 99,000 copies.
He got outsold by Punisher. However, it had the big talk after, so I bet issue two sells possibly better than the first issue.
I know they're ordering more reprints, so it's gonna get a second printing. They underestimated the amount, of demand.
Well, this is one of those things, if they know what was in the book, they should have printed more copies and let comic book stores know so they can proactively...
No, this was intentional. It looks good on the sales when you have reprints.
Okay, I guess. And at number six, we had Star Wars. I'm just going to just go out and start listing off the titles now. Number seven, Justice League. Actually, that was, no, issue 50, that was before the book that we read. Number eight is Darth Vader. Number nine, still strong, Black Panther.
I'm a little surprised on that one.
At 77,000 copies. And at number 10, to round out the top 10 as far as comic books sales are concerned, Amazing Spider-Man, issue 12.
Deadpool did not feature in the top 10.
No, he was slotted sharing a spot with Spider-Man at 15.
He's 15, 16, 17, and 18.
Well, he's got that going for him. Good job, Deadpool. So I'll watch your movie someday.
Between the four of those, he probably outsold DC Universe Rebirth.
See, interesting.
Yes, if you add up all of his comics.
Any interesting notes as I scroll this down? Scooby-Doo Apocalypse is at number 11 at 69,000 copies.
I read that was horrifically bad.
No, here's the thing. I read it, and it wasn't horrifically bad.
That's all the reviews I read said this is a bad comic.
It wasn't even like funny bad. It was just, this is an awful idea. Whoever came up with the idea should be fired. But with that said, it wasn't so bad that, hey, we should review this book because it's so fun. It's so awfully funny.
It's going to drop by like 40,000 though, isn't it?
I'm looking at this list. 4001 AD nearly beat out Captain America Sam Wilson.
That's a bad sign. Captain America Sam Wilson, not long for this world.
Probably not.
Miss Marvel's ain't selling well either. She hasn't recovered.
No, but digital, dude.
Yeah, that's the only
thing.
That's what everyone
tells me.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think even Marvel has announced, or maybe not Marvel, I think Comixology announced that, because they didn't give out numbers, but one time they mentioned which books sell really well on digitally.
Wait a minute, why can't Comixology announce the numbers? They probably have something signed with DC and Marvel.
Probably, I imagine. But yeah, they said that among the best sellers digitally is Miss Marvel. So
okay.
I guess Miss Marvel may just appeal to younger people.
Except we have no idea what
we don't know
the best sales would be. So it's still a mystery. Digital is a mystery.
Mystery.
Nice.
That.
Oh, too soon. Too soon, dude.
Too soon. Oh yeah, let me die.
Oh. I wonder if he ever got that element named after him. There were a couple stories, I think, the week that he passed. There were some additions to the periodic tables, and one of them was named after Lemmy.
You know, I don't really like Motorhead.
Most people don't.
Ace of Spades is a cool song.
What about the Triple H song?
No, that's not very good.
Evolution?
Well, you see, when he sang... He sang Triple H's song, and he fucking didn't know any of the words. That was good.
The Overkill song is good.
Yeah, I'll give you that too.
Yeah. They sound too much like a punk band, which is my nice way of saying they're sloppy as fuck.
Well, speed metal, dude. Let's see if I can very quickly look at some interesting notes here. That Hanna-Barbera crossover, number 29 at 48,000 units.
Good for them. While we are reading DC, I will not read fucking Hanna-Barbera Scooby-Doo books. I don't care.
Hey, oh, by the way, Doctor Strange, he's making a comeback.
He's been the biggest success story of Secret Wars.
Yeah, he's outselling Iron Man.
Well, we've read Iron Man, so.
All right.
That's understandable.
With that out of the way, let's very quickly do graphic novels so we can move on. At number one, we have Killing Joke Special Edition hardcover. At 6,300.
When's that movie coming out?
Pretty soon. I know they're gonna do, are you guys gonna go to a theater screening of that?
I don't know if they're going to air that here where I live. It's a limited release.
Yeah, dude, I live in fucking Dubuque, Iowa right now. They ain't having no special showings here.
I may be tempted to go. I'm not the biggest fan of The Killing Joke, but if they're going to do it in theaters, it's still based off a comic book.
I love Killing Joke. I'm super hyped.
It's no Long Halloween, I'll say that much.
It's different.
Okay, and to round out the top five is Descender, Volume 2. Civil War, I presume that's the original copy. Black Science, Volume 4, God World. And to round out the top five, we have We Stand on Guard, Deluxe Hardcover, because apparently people are still nut huggers of, what does the internet call them? BVK?
BVK?
Yes.
BKV. Brian K. Vaughn.
That book
was
no
good. Does the K stand for Kennedy?
I have no idea.
I bet he's related.
That's going to do it for comic book sales for the month of May of this year. All right? With that out of the way, let's go into the lightning round. Danger, high voltage, when we touch, what we get, when we touch, what we get. For this week's lightning round, we have Black Widow Issue 4, Civil War 2, X-Men 1, International Iron Man 4, and Han Solo Number 1.
I didn't read any of these with Black Widow, so I'm gonna grab another beer.
Oh, let's open. Okay, while you're grabbing the beer, let's do a book that Alex didn't read. Civil War 2, X-Men 1. Dave, what'd you think of this book?
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I haven't been reading that X-Men, so.
It was a way to trick you into reading that Uncanny X-Men book, though. I think we read issue one. We thought it was the most generic book ever. Art was really good, but with that said, I'm never reading this again.
Yeah, this issue, Magneto and a team of, his team of X-Men, they're in Dubai. And, there's a bunch of rich mutants that are trying to hide away from the Terrigen Cloud Mist, because they're all rich. And, they basically invade their little party and bring in all the mutants from around the area. So they don't die.
This is how far I read in this, dude. Fuck this story.
they're attacked by Sentinel. Storm and her team help out. Magneto learns about Ulysses. They go away. He's like, oh, Inhumans hate us, blah. And then at the end of the issue, Nightcrawler meets up with Magneto. He's like, oh, I think I want to join your team because I believe in what you say.
Nightcrawler? That doesn't make any sense. He's a Catholic.
He's probably, spying, I don't know.
I think that's going to be the end game in that, yeah. It's going to be him playing me in the mall. Whatever, yeah. They tricked us into reading that Uncanny X-Men book.
Magneto's a militant lib.
Yeah, shocker.
Probably fucking going to vote for Bernie Sanders, bitch.
Out of spite.
I'm going to be shit-faced by the end of this podcast, by the way. I've been drinking all day.
I don't know if that means I should hurry this up or we should take our time so we can listen to you.
Take your time.
Nice. All right, next book, International Iron Man number 4.
More of the same. He's having his little conversation with Cassandra. She has him cornered, and she has her mandroids after him, and he doesn't appear to have any armor. They show some more flashbacks. And this issue, we also find out, apparently, he was adopted from Bulgaria.
Yeah. I know whose dad is. Fucking Rusev. The Bulgarian brute. This story's got a rock.
What's that?
That story's got a rock. I want Rusev and Iron Man. Fucking rips his iron arms off and shit and beats him with them. Tony Stark sucks.
By the way, next issue, supposedly, we'll find out the reveal.
So. Hydra.
No, Hydra.
We talked about this before the show. His dad's a Red Skull. He has a little Bulgarian in him.
I'm pretty sure I know who his dad is.
Who?
It's me, Austin!
Oh, son of a bitch!
What? It's me, Austin! It was me all along, Austin!
No, it's not. BKV.
BKV?
BKM.
BKM. It's Vincent. What's the next one?
All right, next book, Han Solo, issue 1.
Yeah, this book takes place, you know, not immediately after, but shortly after A New Hope.
Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, they're hiring him because they need a ship that is fast enough to track down. Apparently, they have a mole in the Alliance, or in the Rebel groups. And Leia and General Kraken believe if they use a ship that is off the books, it will, you know, eventually flush out the Imperial mole.
General Kraken?
Yeah.
Who's that? So,
I don't know. Whoever it was in this book.
Is he contained somewhere?
Was he? It's a trap.
No.
Can I ask this question? Is he currently held in a cell somewhere? He's kept in captivity.
The Kraken?
Yeah. So they can later on say, "Release the Kraken."
Kraken is a sea monster, not a ship captain.
So yeah, the plan is to enter Han Solo in a race called the Droid Void Run. And yeah, that was pretty much it.
That sounds shit. Fuck Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm pretty much giving up on this book. And if you look at the comic book sales, it kind of reflects that as well, I noticed. People are catching on to the gimmick. It's like
Didn't they have two of the top 10 spots?
Let me look at this. But the numbers are in fact slipping though.
Okay. Yeah, but all numbers are slipping. It's still in the top 10, Vader and Star Wars, the key books.
No, I think it was just Vader that was on there.
No, Star Wars was too.
Star Wars on there.
Star Wars was like 6, Vader was 8.
Okay.
Boom.
Boom goes the dynamite. All right, and our final lightning round book, Black Widow issue 4. I didn't bother reading this issue, so let me know what happens.
Oh. I thought it was kind of good, actually, but what the fuck am I going to say about this book?
It was a little better than the other ones, but they're really like stretching it out. Like they have something over her. It's basically some chick from her past who they trained to be the next Black Widow.
So she came from the Red Room, which was where they trained all the little girls to be super spies for Russia. And there was a girl who lived there who was her friends when she was a kid. Who was like the daughter of the woman who ran it, but she always said, oh, she's too weak and fragile, so she can't have the training. Well, she ended up, the weak, fragile one ended up taking over from her mother, the Red Room, and she moved it somewhere else, somewhere hidden, and it doesn't have government backing anymore. And, she's training her own group of young assassins, but she's killing everyone who is still alive who is related to the original Red Room. So the first storyline they're doing in Black Widow's own book is a storyline related to her origin, which is good. That's good writing. And the art's really good, too. So.
I'd like to know what they have over her that she's all scared.
Oh.
Hopefully they reveal it soon.
She can't have kids.
Big whoop.
I don't know about that.
Wasn't that in the movie?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's what it was in the movie, yeah.
That was from the movie. People got all upset.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because she felt like less of a woman because she couldn't have kids.
That'll piss off the internet.
I'm not that drunk to get into that topic, but...
You know we're going to hear it once we go offline.
Next book.
Yeah, you are, if I remember.
That's going to wrap up the lightning round, Dave.
Next. Oh, it is?
Yes, in fact. We only did the 4 books. All right, with that out of the way, let's go into this week's books. Guess is on the song.
Ninja Turtles?
Yeah.
Is that from the arcade game?
Turtles in Time.
Oh, okay.
The so best arcade game.
Well, but it wasn't Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game.
No, it was better.
As a kid, I remember they had the Ninja Turtles game for NES, and it kind of sucked. Like, it wasn't very good. And then they put out the shitty port of the arcade game, but it rocked.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the shitty first one.
I don't really hate the first one.
Yeah, there's been defenders of that. And, you know, going back and play that as an adult, it's a fairly decent game. It's not a great game.
I will say this, the internet has made a huge deal of the dam level where you swim through the stuff. I beat that as a kid. No fucking problem.
No, here's the thing. I'm with most people on the internet. I didn't know you could switch out turtles in the middle of the thing.
Really?
So I tried being that with the same turtle, and yeah, of course, like just like everybody else, dude, I couldn't beat it.
All you do is, even if you're worried about dying, you pick like Michelangelo or Raphael because they suck in the game. You just don't have Donatello swim through because he is the best.
Yeah, that level, you know, I remember as a kid, I mean, one playthrough and of practice, I pretty much always beat that level right off the bat.
Yeah, there was harder shit on the NES than fucking the damn level in Ninja Turtles. That was fucking shit. That came out after Ninja Gaiden. You try to get across that bridge.
If you're a kid, are you going to be more inclined to play Ninja Gaiden or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I played Ninja Gaiden too, and I never beat that shit. It was way too hard.
Yeah, but you know what? I will say this about Ninja Gaiden as well. You could beat a couple of levels of that before it gets really hard.
Well, the dam is the second level.
That's my point.
Dam isn't that
a level.
Ninja Gaiden doesn't get really hard until like the third, fourth, fifth level.
Has better music.
Are you showing your hand for next week's music?
No, I won't pick Ninja Gaiden. Too predictable.
All right, let's go to this week's books, which include Claw 6, Batman 1, Dark Knight Returns, The Last Crusade 1, Green Arrow 1, Superman 1, Titans Rebirth 1, Astro City 36, Clean Room 9, Lucifer 7, Descender 12, Lazarus 22, Amazing Spider-Man 14, Ant-Man 9, Civil War 2, Issue 2, Squadron Supreme 8, Uncanny Inhumans 10, and Wrath of the Eternal Warrior 8.
I almost want to flip the order we do them in because I like the DC shit so much more. But
you want to do that? We can do that. We can call an audible. As long
if you
want to
do it, we do Marvel, Valiant, Image. Let's mix this shit up, man. Let's go nuts.
All right. So what do you want to open with? Marvel then?
Let's open with Valiant because we only had one book.
Okay. That's very good.
Yeah, we did only have one book.
Let's pull it up. We have Wrath of the Eternal Warrior issue 8. And since we're flipping the script, let me very quickly look up the writer and artist while you guys do the recap.
Oh, so Marvel, before the show we were talking about this, he's like, he died like 10 times in the book, and I corrected him. He died like 36 times in the book.
I predicted, and I think for listeners, you have to go back a couple episodes of Comic Conversations. I did predict he was going to die again, because they devoted, four issues of him trying to come back to life. I'm like, which one I bet he's going to die again, and he's going to have to go through this all over again.
Well, we knew in the last issue that the whole gimmick was they're going to kill him over and over and over again to try to figure out what's going on. But cleverly in this issue, they kept the afterlife story with his family. They moved that forward while still moving because, like, his kid, the kid that he couldn't rescue, saw in whatever the fuck we read the previous issue, he kept wanting to talk to him. But, you know, Eternal Warrior, he's dying, but he knew that they were studying him to find shit out, so he had to keep rushing out to get back to life.
Remember the reason why they're trying to study him is because the guy who has him captive is also mortal, but the thing is when he dies, he has a new body. He's trying to keep the same body.
Well, they killed him a variety of different ways, and then he got really pissed off because they weren't learning anything. They were just learning that he comes back to life. So eventually he's like, we're going to try something different. So they had a big monster.
It was a demon they used with magic.
They summoned a demon.
But apparently that gave him the idea to escape the I don't know how, I'm not exactly
he
sure.
Okay, so they had like these glyphs written on the wall.
Yeah.
And he the thing went at him and it like stabbed the wall where they were, and he noticed before he couldn't do anything to the wall, but with those glyphs written on it, the wall like kind of buckled a little bit. So he memorized the glyphs, and then when he came back, the guy's talking to him. He's like, just tell us how you keep coming back to life, because his tests aren't doing shit. He's like, no, you don't have to write a note, because he cuts himself, and then he writes on blood on the window, and, you know, he writes the glyphs he saw, so then he can break through the glass, and then he's like, now you're trapped in here with me.
Ah.
So he gave the Rorschach line, pretty much.
You beat me to it. I was about to quote it.
Well, you can't fucking read a line like that without thinking, oh, it's like Rorschach. It's so awesome.
Yeah, and
but it was a good issue.
The since I was playing catch up, the writer is Robert Venditti, art by Raw Allen.
I'm shocked you didn't know the writer.
Robert Venditti is writing that Green Lantern book that we were going to read this week and then found out it was the wrong Green Lantern book.
That's the one that, what's his name, Humphreys is writing.
Yeah, and when I found out Sam Humphreys is writing it, I refused to read it.
I'm shocked you want to read it, considering it's Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns.
I don't care. It's Geoff Johns isn't writing it, so I'll give it a shot.
And as far as not knowing the writer, I should have known because it's a Valiant book and there's a chance it's either Matt Kent or Robert Venditti.
Hey, did you see the cover of the Hitch Justice League book, the Key Justice League book?
No, I haven't.
It's okay. Cyborg's still on theme, by the way, but yeah. Green Lantern is the chick Green Lantern. So that's no, I'm okay with that because I don't want it to be Hal.
What do you think it's Hal?
I don't like him. I never liked him. Kyle's Green Lantern. Fuck them. He could come back as Ion again. I'd be okay with that. I don't care. I just like him more. He had a cooler gimmick. Hal still makes fucking boxing gloves and shit.
That's funny, though.
Kyle was a writer or an artist, so he had more of an imagination. Dude, he used to make, like, fucking armies of flying monkeys and shit. He did all kinds of wacky
shit. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you what I found. Now, it's almost impossible to find in comic book stores, and it's even harder digitally, but I found Emerald Twilight.
Well, it's an old book. You read it?
I'm currently, you know, I just bought it the other day, so I'm going to start reading it probably after the show.
It's pretty good. Turns out it was a yellow space bug that caused it, though.
Spoilers?
No, you don't find that out until Geoff Johns starts writing it like 30 years later.
Oh, perfect. Then why do I care, then?
Because if Hal goes crazy, that means he's a bad character. I guess.
All right, what publisher are we going to go to next?
Let's do
we have Image. Marvel. Okay, Marvel. All right, let's open up with Amazing Spider-Man. Obviously written by Dan Slott, art by Giuseppe Comunicoil.
Putting Region over. That's the new thing. I like Region.
As do I. I've seen some people not really big on Region, but I'm like, he's a good original bad guy. He's a lot better than Scorpio. I hated Scorpio.
Yes.
Well, they the thing with him is they're trying to do the thing where, you know, the villain doesn't think he's a villain.
Yeah, he thinks that the heroes are just as bad as the villains.
Yeah, but he's beating the shit out of children. Like
beat
up Miles and Kamala. Like, you know, with that, it's like, no, you're a bad guy, dude. You're beating up kids.
He's not a good guy.
He's not that the bad guy, but he's the guy.
He's the guy. Region could beat Seth Rollins clean. Pretty sure. No, but, you know, he's capturing the superheroes because he's mad because they cause just as much damage as the supervillains. And he, you know, he has all Miles' powers and Kamala's powers.
Tony and Peter, they try to talk to Miles' parents. Like, yeah, he's on this, you know, special thing for bright kids and he can't beat the internet and, you know.
Yeah, he'll contact you in a couple of weeks, and Tony got all pissed because he's like,
"You don't know that."
Why the fuck did you tell him that? You don't know that. And he's like, "Whatever, Tony. I know what's going on. I was Spider-Man."
Yeah, so but you don't know I'm Spider-Man. But I was his friend in high school.
Yeah, but the Avengers figured out where Regent was, and they went after him, and he beat the shit out of Thor and captured her. So now he's got Thor powers too. That was cool. And he just beat the shit out of the entire Avengers team. Cap wasn't there because this is the all new, all different Avengers. So like he beat up Falcon without much of a problem. Falcon can't, he's got fucking wings. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, he beat them all. And, but they tease in the next issue that Mary Jane's gonna, I guess, save the day with her spider armor.
Oh, that's
terrible. Well, that was the cover.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's Mary what they predicted at the end of the book as well.
Mary Jane look hot as fuck in spider armor, man.
Said nobody.
I don't know. They intended you to find her attractive in the spider armor.
No, sir. I don't like it.
Well, she didn't wear a mask. That's the problem. It's kind of stupid. She's not wearing a mask. And it was the spider armor that they gave Spider-Man in Civil War.
Yeah.
The original Civil War.
Well, I think he technically had that armor before Civil War. But like right before...
No, he didn't. He got it during Civil War. Tony Stark made it for him, didn't he?
No, he had that just prior to that, just prior to Civil War, because he got that suit when he moved into the Stark Tower, and that that happened right before Civil War.
Well, stupid fucking costume.
Yeah, a little bit, but I think this served a purpose to tell a bigger story.
Yeah, that's fine. No, it was a good issue though. They're treating Regent right. I almost think they're moving too fast because it's like, oh, he's introduced in second issue. Oh, he just beat the Avengers. Okay.
And then they're already teasing the weaknesses he has. Apparently the suit, it puts a strain on him as well as it has limitations as well.
Yeah, because he, like Nighthawk, he has a sidekick who reads off information to him about what's going on. She's like, oh, you're expending too much power. He's like, no, it'll be fine. I'm going to beat them all. And then he even had his big villain moment where he's like, I'm the only hero the world needs. And he yelled it, and they used big text so you knew he was yelling.
Yes.
It was good, though. I enjoyed it. You're right. I defended Scorpio, but he is better than Scorpio.
I told you. And I think you were the guy who tried to defend Scorpio by saying, hey, we need new villains. And I was there with the argument.
We do.
And I was there with the argument, hey, Regent was great in that one series. Maybe they'll bring him in.
Yeah, and they did. Great. So that's all right. Scorpio had a cooler costume, though.
I'm going to let that go so we can move on to the next book. Astonishing Ant-Man, issue 9. Obviously, writer Nick Spencer, art by Ramon Rosanas.
It's all coming to a head now. They did a lot of recaps. And
his arch nemesis is so shit.
Yeah. It could be worse. It could be Egghead.
Darren Cross. The funniest thing in this book, and it's been the funniest joke in this book since it went through, was Machine Smith is leading off the steps to a good break-in or whatever, and they're running off all the steps, and one of them was disguise yourselves as security guards, and it was and fucking Grizzly is still wearing the bear costume, and then one of the other steps was. Have the guards say they'll investigate what's going on. And then the next step was guard notices they're wearing a bear costume. I showed this to my wife and she laughed. So that's successful comedy there.
And then my favorite is when what's the name of the machine guy?
Machine Smith.
Machine Smith.
Machine Smith is displaying the plan that they have. He's showing the blueprint and he's like, okay, this is the plan, blah, blah, blah. A lot of Bothans die to bring us these plans.
Yeah. He also pointed out at the end, or after they notice he is wearing a bear suit. It was so funny, too, the art, because he's got the security guard costume, but he can't fit it around his bear suit. So it's all open. But, yeah, he pointed out at the end, he's like, maybe this isn't the best plan ever.
Oh, yeah, for a while they were just listening off, I think it was how to do a high-profile heist in 20 easy steps. And for a couple of pages, it was just each individual step of what to do.
Yeah, and they got worse and worse as it went on. It was a great gag. It was like 3 pages long.
Yeah.
So
he was only able to get in there because basically like, well, look, I'm here to rescue my daughter, but if you want to steal shit while you're at it to make money, go ahead.
Well, yeah, because he had a bunch of villains helping him out.
Yep.
So, yeah, so they were stealing stuff, and he went to save Cassie, and she was cornered by
Cross and him.
Cross and his kid and Deadshot or whatever the fuck that guy's name is. And then they fought.
I think it was in a Crossfire or some shit.
Crossfire.
You're the cop.
Nice. This is a good issue. This is better than this book has been.
Yes, very much so. All right, next book. Civil War 2, Issue 2, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by David Marquez.
She-Hulk's not dead, but Hulk might be.
Called it!
Banner. They should kill him. Well, they could. You know, the problem with them killing She-Hulk was Rhodey's not in anything, and nobody gives a shit about him anyway.
Yeah.
She-Hulk people would be upset if she died.
Yeah, War Machine can die. Nobody will care.
Yeah,
he's not featured in any other books besides this one. Who
except
cares?
Tony Stark. Tony cares.
Yeah, because imagine a book where he comes back to life. Who would care?
Yeah, no one will care. It'll never be a big deal. You can kill him, no problem. She-Hulk people will get upset.
She-Hulk's kind of over. She's in that Hellcat book, and she's pretty hilarious in that. So
if the tease at the end of this book was Ulysses got a vision that the Hulk was going to kill everyone.
Yes.
So the last panel is Banner. We finally see him. He's apparently just hanging out in a lab. she goes to see Banner, and she, the indication is she's going to kill him.
She being Captain Marvel.
Yeah, Captain Marvel, and the implication is she's going to kill him. So she could kill Banner because he is not currently Hulk. He is not in any other books. This is the first we've seen of him since, like, what, the first issue of Totally Awesome Hulk?
But didn't they also tease that he was returning in Totally Awesome Hulk?
Well, not if he's dead.
Well, they may bring him back for that in the tie-in or something.
I don't know, but it looked like she was gonna kill him. She's gonna do something. The main focus of this issue was Iron Man is grief stricken and not thinking clearly, and he broke into New Attila and kidnapped Ulysses and then kind of tortured him to learn how his powers work. And the Inhumans get. By the way, Karnak is back with the Inhumans now, and he's really angry, which I guess they're taking from his series where he's always killing people. But Karnak is just kind of there and leading the charge to go fucking kill Iron Man because he's so upset about what he's done. He broke into New Attila, and they said it was basically an act of war. So he takes him, and he's trying to figure out how his powers work, and the Avengers come in, the Ultimates come in, the Inhumans come in, and... But then Ulysses' powers turn on, except this time everyone can see the vision. So they all see Hulk killing everyone. Which doesn't really tell them that it's true or not, but Captain Marvel obviously believes it, which leads her to go and maybe kill Banner. The only other thing we found out in this issue was She-Hulk is in critical condition, but not dead.
So then why did her, the heart monitor, why did it go flatline?
Well, she's a Hulk, dude. She's got healing powers. Maybe it just went down for a minute and then it went back up.
Oh, God. It's possible, because, yeah, I mean, the...
Banner
the
Hulk, got shot in the fucking head and he lived.
Yeah.
As a human.
I imagine that's the deal with that.
Yeah, well, it'd be hard to kill her because of A-Force.
That too.
Like, she has another book. Like I said, Rhodey and Banner, they don't have their own book.
I forgot she was in that as well, yeah. It's been a while since I read that.
Although, the only other explanation I can come up with is he doesn't know she's dead because he left before she died.
Well, but they gave every indication that she's still alive.
Except for the heart monitor going flat.
Well, aside from that, but why would they even bring it up?
Well, I guess they wanted to say that she wasn't dead.
Because you can't do the death reveal twice. Like, you can't be like, oh, she's dead, and then come back and say, well, maybe she's not dead, and then do, oh, she's dead for real now.
That'd be funny. That's what we wound up getting.
The problem with her killing Banner is, I mean, it works two ways. On the positive side, she has now committed murder based on something that technically they don't know if it's going to come true or not.
And isn't that what I said was going to happen?
Yeah, which would be a problem, but it would also push the story forward a little more.
But she hasn't killed him yet. You're just assuming she's going to kill him.
I'm assuming because otherwise this is a really flat story.
Wow. Yeah, it feels flat.
They're not about doing that.
There needs to be a big moment to kick this forward. And to give Bendis some credit, he is somewhat moving the plot. I mean, a lot of the fight with the Inhumans was kind of like, okay, this is padding. But... You know, the story is moving at a faster clip than, say, Age of Ultron.
That was terrible. That was 10 issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
And nothing happened until issue 9.
Yeah, for the most part. But he's notorious for doing stuff like that. It wasn't House of M, wasn't that just as bad?
No, because Avengers Disassembled wasn't a very long storyline. Mm-hmm. Marvel, wasn't that just one issue?
What, Avengers Disassembled?
Yeah.
It was a crossover, but I think the big issue was one issue, and then they had, like, an aftermath.
The one where they killed Jack of Hearts and all that.
Yeah, that was, like, one issue.
Yeah, so...
But it did, like, crossover. But
House of M did go on for a long time, but a lot of that was crossovers that Bendis didn't write.
Okay. That was just me asking. All right. From there, we're going to move on to our next book, Squadron Supreme, Issue 8, writer James Robertson, art by Leonard Clark. And I know I asked you guys if you read this book, and obviously you read this book, Alex, and we were debating whether or not to review it. And you said we have to talk this because you have to get something off your chest. So the floor is yours.
I don't like this, all this Inhuman bullshit that Marvel is interjecting in. And I understand you have to get the Inhumans over because they're a big deal. But in this, they're doing it in ways that don't even make sense. Dr. Spectrum goes to New Attilan, is invited by Black Bolt, and he's there with Medusa. And she wants to know why he saved her. And they gave two reasons. One of them was he didn't feel good about them blowing up a fucking planet, and she was there, so he saved her. But the other reason was the energy in her prism he recognized as the same energy he channels through his deal there. So Medusa reasoned this must mean she is also an Inhuman. And she explained, well, I'm from another Earth and everything's different there. And she's like, well, we came from the Kree experimenting on primitive humans. Did you have the Kree? And she explained that on her world, the Kree were not aliens. They were magical beings. And they're like, oh, okay. So these magical beings, they created the gem that you use to give you your powers. So you're an Inhuman, which is fucking stupid. She's got a fucking power ring, basically. She's green. She's fucking Green Lantern is what she is. She's got the same powers. She's not green. But because she carries this gem, it made Black Bolt think she was an Inhuman and made him save her. And then she's like, well, I have to decide if I want to kill him or not now, basically, because she was confused by this. And then we cut to the more interesting story, which is Nighthawk fighting Nighthawk. And they're fighting in midair like they were in last issue. And then he basically redirects him towards a building, slams him through the building, and the guy gets impaled on sharp, pointy things.
It was like a wall, and there were spikes on it for whatever reason why I can't figure
which,
out.
Which made no sense, but there were spikes on this wall, and he got impaled in them. But after he died, it turned out he was a Skrull. So, but this isn't a side story. This is connected to this whole disparate groups of aliens who are coming to take over the world, and it turns out they're being led by a warrior woman who, despite us only finding out was a villain 3 issues ago, she is already the lead heel for the book, which is interesting. I think when you have a reveal like that, you should probably give it some time to build.
Yeah.
But they've immediately brought her back. The problem with this book, and this is not a badly written comic at all, but the problem with the book is what we were told this book would be, which was pretty much they're the authority, is not what they're doing since the first issue when they killed Namor.
And in fact, now that you bring up Namor and you bring up the Nighthawk death, are they going to walk back the Namor death by saying he was a Skrull?
He was a Skrull. And that was all a part of this?
Yeah.
Probably that would be how they would do it.
And that's really convenient, and that's something to where you don't really have to jump through hoops considering they reestablished that.
I mean, they still destroyed Atlantis. They can't say the city of Atlantis was a Skrull.
No, but they can very easily say, and maybe they could say that this was there was plotted in advance.
And it doesn't
So Namor isn't dead? He was a Skrull?
We're fantasy.
That's what we're assuming. They didn't reveal that in this, but it's a theory.
We're speculating.
And the other problem is, like, where was he this whole time?
Trying to get at Sue still.
Yeah, I guess. But she's gone. He's looking for Sue. He just needs some ass. No, this book is significantly less interesting than both Nighthawk and even Hyperion.
Yeah, you brought that up offline. I'm like, you know what? It sounds funny, but it's true.
And I think the issue is some of these characters are interesting, but they don't have the ability to show it in this book. Like, you had a Blur there and Hyperion, and they didn't speak in this issue. Like, they were there, but they never even said a word. Nighthawk and Dr. Spectrum were the only ones who got to talk. And, you know, from a the fact that Dr. Spectrum doesn't have her own book means it kinda makes sense why she would be the one they do something with in this, but they're not really developing her character. They're having her deal with the one thing we know about the character, but they're not letting us know anything else about the character except her world blew up and she doesn't like Black Bolt.
But she's kind of cool with Black Bolt, because if it wasn't for her, she would have died as well.
Yeah, which is a somewhat interesting story. It's like, yeah, he helped to destroy my world, but he did save me, which, you know, I'd still be pissed at him for destroying my world and killing everyone I knew, but.
And he has a pretty awful reason for saving her, and I think Medusa sort of explained, well, he realized the situation it was, you know, why not save some life while you still can? But then the other one was selfishly, well, cause you're kind of an inhuman from another dimension.
Yeah, it makes Black Bolt seem like a dick, but I mean, he was a dick when he was blowing up fucking planets, so.
He's racist.
Whatever.
I won't have it.
I know, he'll only save inhumans, and she wasn't even a real inhuman. And, yeah, so they brought the two separate storylines together, and hopefully in the next issue, they'll deal with this superhero or super alien team up thing, and they'll beat Warrior Woman, and then we can move on to something else. I just want them to get back to the, if you did this right, you could eventually position the Squadron Supreme against the Ultimates. Because they're the two teams that, in premise at least, kind of matched up. By the way, I was super pissed off when I was reading Amazing Spider-Man. I don't know if anybody else noticed this. He had Hyperion in one of his fucking tanks. And it's like, can we downgrade Hyperion anymore? He's fucking Superman. But Regent was able to take him out?
Well, unlike Superman, I think his powers are heavily... He's heavily dependent on the sun. And they even showed him...
Superman!
I don't think he's... If you keep him out of the sun long enough, I don't think he loses his powers.
So what, Regent kept him out of the sun?
Maybe he went after him at night?
No, it doesn't... He bleeds sun.
You're reaching.
Like he's got enough energy. We've seen him fight at night. In that entire Hyperion book, all the fights have taken place at night. He does not lose his powers at night. He's not a reverse vampire. they didn't show it, but that just pissed me off a little bit. It's like, you gotta build these fuckers up. And they're not doing it. They're not doing it right at all. The only one who comes off like a badass is Nighthawk.
Well, as he should, he's the Batman of the team.
Well, yeah, but still.
By the way, according to Forbes via WrestleZone, WWE has reportedly contacted Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, Rey Mysterio, and Goldberg. They say that WWE would like to use Angle on SmackDown and possibly team him with American Alpha.
That would be great. Also, I wish they could have got him back before fucking Daniel Bryan retired, though.
Breaking news here on Comic Conversations.
Also, they're interested in bringing back Carlito, John Morrison, JTG, Chad, and Shelton Benjamin.
Most of those aren't actually... They could pick worse.
Yeah, those aren't too bad.
Like, you bring Carlito back so he can try to get over the shitty stars or whatever they're called. And
I like that name better, to be honest.
John Morrison can't come back, though, because he's on 7-year contract, right?
I don't know, because some of those contracts are... I mean, they might have contacted him to find out his contract.
Hey.
Ricochet's was only 3 years.
I was going to say, Fat Man, you know who they didn't contact? Ricochet.
No.
And the Young Bucks.
Well, the thing is, there's a match coming up. It's a retirement match versus Mask or some bullshit.
Did they already kill it?
No, he came back to life. If Ricochet is retiring, if he wins, that means that he re-signed with Lucha Underground.
Well, you know who was on NXT last week, don't you?
No.
Tessa Blanchard.
Oh yeah, I know.
Who he's fucking. Yes. So, just saying, he'd be a good guy for NXT.
Next book, Uncanny Inhumans, issue 10, writer Charles Soule, art by Kev Walker.
That was a pretty good issue. I kind of like
it. Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah, Reader, remember in the, I think it was the last issue, the Capo had possessed his dog. So he went looking for his dog in the Capo, and he took one of these young Inhumans with him. But they ended up getting killed because it was a trap. By the Capo and his henchmen.
She didn't have powers, by the way.
She didn't? Oh yeah, no. They mentioned that, right? That
yeah, she hadn't gone through Terra Genesis or whatever yet.
Yeah. So he ends up dying, or she ends up dying, and he gets captive, but he uses his powers to basically
reverse time.
Yeah, reverse time. And they kind of give you like a little explanation of his powers of what he does. He's like, most people don't even know what to do.
They gave him his origin. It was fucking sad. So the reason he's blind is because he grew up in one of these inhuman enclaves, like not on New Attilan. And they found out his power was, this is why he's called Reader, everything he read became real. So to keep him from reading, they gouged his eyes out so he couldn't see because this inhuman enclave apparently had no understanding of what Braille was. But, you know, he learned to read Braille. Reader.
Well, maybe he didn't know, maybe they didn't think it would work that way.
Well, it did. So he put like rewrite or something on the ground and then he pointed out, and this is the reason they did this is because the fact that he can go back in time and change shit would mean he is way too powerful. So he said he doesn't like to do it because stuff can go wrong and it can mess things up and whatever. And it weakens him. So that's why he doesn't do it a lot. But he did it in this. I've been saying for a while Reader is the best new Inhuman. He's got a cool character design and he's kind of a cool character in general. He came off like such a fucking badass in this that you, like, I don't want to read a Reader book. I don't think it would work.
It wouldn't last very long.
But I think of all those many new Inhumans, this is the one who I think, and they sense it because they focus on him so much. This is the one who's going to mean something in the future. So yes. That's good.
Breakout star out of this.
Yeah. Back. He is the breakout star of the new humans.
Yeah. So anyways, he ends up finally rewinding time and making it so, you know, cause you know, he says, look, every time I do it, it's always going to be a little different. So he kept doing it until this character Tresti were able to, you know, get the jump on those guys and, beat them. So then he ends up going to, back to New Attilan cause the Capo, he's trying to possess Iso. That was the one he was originally trying to possess. So Reader gets there in time. And I don't know how this works, but apparently he transformed the Capo into Braille on the glass.
He put like sand or something on it, didn't he?
I'm not really sure.
He put something on it.
Well, anyways, he beats the Capo and he breaks the glass and it looks like I guess he killed him in the process.
Apparently.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
So it was all saved. Iso is saved. She's the second best new human. And the third best new human is Frank, the gun eye guy.
Yeah, that guy.
I like detectives, so.
I think you have to bump everybody down because you said Reader's the breakout new inhuman. Are we forgetting one, Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel?
She doesn't really count, though. I mean, she's an inhuman, but...
You're just saying that because she's Pakistani.
No, she doesn't hang out with them.
She did that one annual.
She's her own thing. She doesn't really hang out with them, like you said.
Like, she never talks about how she's an inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't nice. Count.
All right, since we were playing fast and loose with the publishers, where are we going to go from here? We have DC, we have Boom, and we have Image left.
Image.
Okay, we're going to open up with Descender, issue 12, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Dustin Nguyen.
This was an origin story of Tim 22 before the Harvesters.
Mm-hmm. He got treated like shit by his owner.
Yeah, it was pretty sad, too. Like
he's putting cigarettes out on him and shit.
Yeah, the owner, he was an older man. His son had bought him the Tim 22 model so he can, I guess, help him out and not be lonely.
But the old man was correct in not trusting the robot because one day they would rise up and kill all the humans. And he turned out to be right. So he put him in a closet for
months at a time.
For like two, I think it was like 2 weeks at first. Yeah. And then he went to talk to him and still didn't like him. So he put him back in the closet. And then like they said, like 8 months later, he pulled him out of the closet again. And he's like, hey, there's some weird shit going on. And it was the harvesters destroying the fucking city. So the old man gets killed.
Yeah, and then once he gets killed, Tim 22 no longer has to obey him because that was his orders.
Yeah, because he was dead. So he.
Yeah, they showed basically him on the run for the next 3 years until that one robot who adopted him came to his rescue.
My favorite is, yep. I don't want to be a robo-hobo.
Yeah, well, because he was hanging out with two other robots, like normal robots, and then, you know, the kids came, the junker kids or whatever they're called, and they, scrappers, are they called scrappers?
I think so.
The people who hunt the robots, yeah, and they beat the shit out of those ones, and then this one's like, oh, I'm going to shoot him in the head, and his dad came, he's like, no, you can't shoot him in the head, because then we won't get money for turning him in.
And then obviously Tim 22 is saying, I don't want to have to, don't kill me, please, please, please. And then just in self-defense, yeah, he blasts and kills the father.
Yeah. He disintegrated him. So he explained to Tim 21, the good Tim.
Yeah, and in the present.
Yeah. He explains to him that, you know, this guy found me. I was the special one. Now they're treating you special, but it can only be me. So he had to kill him.
But if you're Tim 21, can't you just say, hey, we look exactly the same. Let's just swap hair colors.
Well, they already did that.
No, I'm saying just.
Oh, you mean like you'll dye your hair?
I'll do it red,
and I'll do red.
You can let them treat you special. Just don't kill me.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe the robots will know regardless.
Well, the key with these two characters is this one was treated like absolute dog shit by people, and Tim 21, he really has no anger towards humans. Because he never had to go through any of this.
He likes humans. In fact, his whole story from the beginning is he's trying to find his human again.
Yeah. Because he only remembers the good times. He wasn't like he wasn't awake for the bad times. So he doesn't really know anything about it. He's been told about it, but he didn't experience it. Whereas Tim 22, he got treated like shit by humans and they locked him in closets and tried to murder him, and you know, and then of course he grew up with robots who hate humans and want to kill all of them, so he would have a different outlook. I don't blame him for being a prick.
Yeah,
he was kind of he grew into it.
He had every reason to be.
Although him killing another robot is a little harder to justify. Because he's not a human.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. From here, let's move on to our final image book, because we only had two. Lazarus, issue 22, writer Greg Rucka, art by Michael Lark.
I was confused by something in this. This is a good issue. It was good to have Lazarus back. Do they have, like, a forever clone? Yes. Is that what it is?
That was... Remember those issues where we had flashback scenes?
Yeah,
Those weren't flashbacks. That was...
Okay. Because we discussed that and we couldn't decide because they, for some reason, he doesn't give the like 10 years ago thing. Apparently the reason he doesn't do that is because it was taking place in the present.
Yes, they were building up a new forever.
Yeah, they're making another forever. And forever,
by the way, this one was called number 8.
Yeah, which is interesting. So is she number 1?
Or she could, well, maybe she's, maybe they had 6 before that were failures, and it was number 7.
And they were the indication on that is they were talking about how they need to replace her leg. And they're like, well, we know there's not going to be any reason for rejection. So are they maybe growing forever clones and then harvesting them for body parts?
Perhaps.
Because that's madly fucked up, but that wouldn't make any sense because the young one, they're training.
Yeah, maybe they're, you know, because, you know, they have to replace so many parts on the current one. Maybe, you know, they can only fix it so much.
Yeah, yeah. But Forever's all fucked up, and she's telling them they're, like, trying to inject her with the drugs and stuff. And she's like begging him, like, please, no drugs, no drugs, because she knows they have like the mind control shit in them.
Mm-hmm.
And she hadn't been taking her pills, and she doesn't want that. Well, meanwhile, the sister, she goes to see how dad's doing, and dad actually wakes up. And he's talking about, because she's reading off her plans, because she took over from the other brother, the gay one, who wasn't really capable of handling, you know, handling the family. Not because he's gay, people. Don't say Alex said that. I don't know their names, so he's the gay brother.
Well, you can say whatever you want. Your last name's not attached to the show.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I'm safe. But I posted it on my Facebook, so.
Yeah, I don't know what your last name is. I've never posted in the description.
Okay, fair enough. But, no, anyway, the dad, like, basically agrees to their plans, and then he's like, where's my little girl? And she's like, oh, I'm right here, Daddy. And he's like, no, where's forever?
Aww.
And they ended up, since they have the Bittner Lazarus, Sonia, yeah. they sent her out to Europe.
Switzerland.
Yeah, to fight. Well, that's in Europe.
I know, but it's so funny.
To fight another Lazarus. Because apparently, you know, she was saying, like, hey, I need forever in 4 weeks. And they're like, well, that's not going to happen. She's like, well, okay, so we'll send Sonia, I guess, because she's becoming buddy-buddy with Young Forever. And we can't have that. They didn't explain why. But we can't have that. Maybe because they don't want her to have any friends outside the family. That could be because... After she sent Sonia away, the sister went in, and the sister, like, demanded she hug her. So she's trying to, maybe she's trying to make her, like, loyal to her? So when she grows up, she can stay in charge of the family? I don't know. I don't know that where means, they're going with this.
Yeah, maybe, like, treat her the way that Forever is with the dad.
Could yeah, be. She's probably going to kill the dad. That'll be a shocking ending to one issue. Because she seems pretty capable, all things considered.
She gonna kill the train?
Yeah, so that's well, yeah, but that's what's going on in this. It was a good issue. It's good to have it back. Forever's not on her feet yet because she only has 1 foot, and that would make it hard.
A little bit.
But we'll figure out more questions raised in this issue. Rucka must be planning on writing this book for like fucking 200 issues. Because he keeps dropping so much.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't, like, he can't, he has to move the story forward, so he can't go on with it. But he's giving you a lot of stuff to question, go like, oh, I wonder what that means. Oh, I wonder what that means. Oh, I'll probably find out in 40 fucking issues, you prick.
Well, isn't he optioning this to be a TV show as well?
I don't know.
I assume, but it would be a very expensive show to do.
Yeah.
A little bit, parts of it. You could scale back certain things.
HBO. He wants to be on HBO.
Yeah, HBO would be the one for, like, because, I mean, if HBO can afford to produce Game of Thrones, I don't know who else.
But with that said, I think they blow most of their wad on Game of Thrones. I don't think they have enough money for Game of Thrones and a Lazarus.
That show does look very expensive.
And you look at all the stuff they do, it doesn't look all that.
Thing is, they have certain scenes and certain seasons that they take up most of the budget.
By the way, can I mention something?
Go ahead.
I told you I started watching The Preacher Show.
Yes. I'm curious for your review now, yeah.
In the second issue, they had a bit with Tulip, who I like. I think she's pretty true to the character. I have issues with the show. But, you know, Tulip I like. And they had this scene where, like, she built, like, a homemade bazooka. And there was a helicopter and guys. And there was a big fight.
That was the first episode.
Oh, was it the first episode? Oh, well, they did this whole fight, and they did it, I guess because they didn't have the money to shoot it. They had her put these two kids to keep them safe in, like, a cellar, and you just heard the noises, and you had the kids reacting through the cellar. Aww. I thought that was kind of a clever way to get around having to spend the money. By the way, my problem with that show are, they've already introduced the Meat Man, which was Salvation was the weakest Preacher story by far.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already introduced him in like the second episode of the show.
Well,
also, it originally, I haven't watched episode 3 yet. It looked like they were never going to get out of fucking Anvil and they were just going to stay there. And I thought that would be complete shit, but it already looks like they're teasing. They're going to leave.
That's good.
Cassidy's good. And Tulip's good. Jesse,
So they haven't really
gotten into this character much. Yeah, it's thumbs in the middle show. There are parts of it that are a lot like the comic. And the thing you gotta understand is I'm always the guy who, when they change stuff in the movies, I don't care. But Preacher is very near and dear to me. So everything they change, I'm probably gonna have a problem with.
But the fact that you're not here ranting and raving.
No, I will continue to watch the show. I find the show enjoyable.
That's funny because Dave, who's also read Preacher, just giving up on the show.
I can't get into it.
I've liked it so far. It has some strong characters. It's just a lot of the stuff they're doing, I question.
Speaking of saving budgets and money, remember, I don't know which season of Game of Thrones it was, but remember when Tyrion gets knocked out during a battle?
Yeah, he got knocked out so they didn't have to show the fight.
Yeah. That's exactly why they did that.
Well, they only got so much money. It's not a fucking movie. It's a TV show.
I've seen the budget that goes into every single episode, and it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Where have you seen the budget?
He means he can see it. The fucking...
No, I think there's been news stories on how much they spend per episode. In fact...
Well, I mean, just the costumes, the sets, the different locations they have to shoot in. I mean, the fucking desert scenes, those are clearly not filmed in the same place as the parts that are covered with snow.
Yeah, they film like in Croatia and freaking, I think, Iceland or something.
Yeah, which are probably cheap to film in, but still, I mean, you're gonna have to fly the cast out, you're gonna have to fly all the equipment out, the crew.
Not to mention the cast is like enormous.
Yeah, it's gigantic, and I assume they don't all make a shit ton of money, but they probably do alright.
Yeah, in fact, I have the number here from Forbes. Game of Thrones season 6 cost $10 million per episode.
Now, that's a lot.
I'm sure it's averaged out. I'm sure they're not spending $10 million on per episode, literally. But I think when you average everything out, it comes out to $10 million per episode.
Isn't it 10 episodes a season?
Yes. So $60 million for this season.
No, if it's $10 million per episode.
And 10 episodes.
It's $100 million.
Oh, yeah, that's right. $100 million.
That's a big budget movie budget.
Well,
like,
how much is it worth? Well, the show.
Well, I don't know because how do you determine that? Because HBO is subscription based.
Yeah, that's how the you know how many viewers it does. They do know it averages anywhere between 6 to 8 million viewers.
Okay, well,
and they probably make a killing off the box sets. It's the most pirated show in the world.
Birch. I don't know how much of that money they get because own Game of Thrones.
If it's 6 million. Subscribers and let's just say 6 million people subscribe just for the show, and that's $15.
That's a big guess though, that 6 million people because I mean how many subscribers has HBO gained since Game of Thrones came on would be the question.
All I know is that the show does anywhere between 6 to 8 million, and it used to do in the beginning like 3, so it's been a word of mouth type thing where they've increased every year. So, I mean, even if it's like a month's worth of subscribers, let's say they gain 3 million. That's a lot of money.
Well, that was our Game of Thrones segment of the show.
Well, let's keep that, sort of, I guess that kind of world with our next book from Boom Studios. We have Claws, issue 6, writer Grant Morrison, art by Dan Mora.
The evil Baron, in preparing for the king to come back, we found out the miners were digging so deep and so hard to release a demon who he apparently promised to feed children to.
Apparently it's Krampus is the demon. Krampus.
Oh, is that his name? They said?
They tease in the solicitation as Santa versus Krampus, yes.
He should be the Grinch. Should have been a big green. He's creepy though. He's got a weird mask and he's all...
Krampus looks a little creepier.
All weird, and he's got a fucking wants to eat kids really badly. But they found that out, and you know the king shows up, and him and the royal guard or whoever is with him is like, you're starving your people, and you're fucking using black magic, and you're overtaxing, and everyone's miserable. We've come to take you out, and he's like, oh, but I made you this very nice dinner. And then Krampus comes through, and Klaus isn't there to save him, because They found Klaus and they damn near killed his wolf. And then they burnt down his house and then they staked him to ice.
To die.
To die, which fucking supervillains, bullshit, Bond crap. Just fucking cut his throat. No, we're gonna tie you down to the ice and leave you there.
And hope so he dies.
So he has Wolfie, sing and calls the Yuletide spirits who are coming to res him, as we say in Warcraft. And, he's apparently going to get the Yuletide spirit's power and then he will be OG Santa and will use that power to kick ass.
Yeah, this is a Morrison book, all right?
Yeah, it's a good issue though.
Yeah, so it's a fun book.
It's fun. The last issue is the last one. Seven issue series.
Yeah, the next issue, last issue.
It didn't have the moment where it freaks me out. As per usual with a Morrison book?
No, it's a very point A to point B story. And there's magical spirits, but there's nothing weird about them. They're just magical spirits. And there's a demon, but it's just a demon. So it's all right. It's all right. I like this. I hope to see it end in a positive way. Which it would, because he's Santa Claus.
you kind of help things work out for old Saint Nick.
Yeah, I don't want Saint Nick to die. I feel bad for Saint. I mean, I remember this Christmas. The only Christmas movie I watched was Rudolph, mm-hmm. And I don't really buy this guy has ended up like that Santa Claus.
Probably not.
Eat Santa. You know what my favorite part of that movie is?
All of it.
No, it's when the fucking elves are all singing, and Santa's just not impressed at all. He's such a dick to the elves. And then he yells because Hermie wasn't there, and that's why it sucked.
He was not impressed with their performance.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, Miss Claus is like trying to smooth over, like, oh, I thought it was wonderful. And they don't give a shit what she says because she's not Santa. Such a dick. And this Santa is not a dick. He would have told the elves they were good. I like to think.
All right. From there, that leaves us with our only publisher, but I'm going to make the folks wait a little bit longer. We're moving on to DC, but we're going to talk all the Vertigo books first. So let's open up with Astro City, issue 35, writer Kurt Busiek, art by Ron Randall.
I thought this story would go on longer.
No, well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, this is...
Two issues?
Was it two? I thought this was the third one, but yeah, it could have been two.
Yeah, he usually does 3-issue storylines, and this one was only two, and I thought they could have done, well, I mean, that's the thing, I was thinking they would have done more with this, but they gave the origin of the villain, and then they resolved the story, yeah, so what, really, what you didn't have to go further. Yeah,
what else was there left to do?
Yeah, there was nothing else, but I just,
We find out that the drama queen, her father was the drama king?
Yes. Mr. Drama.
Yeah, Mr. Drama.
Mr. Drama.
Yeah, apparently, we find out that the reason why, he died in this battle with the original Jack in the Box is because he was dying of cancer and he wanted to go out like a tough guy.
In the blaze of glory.
He basically planned a suicide.
Yeah. But he killed Cracker Jack during this.
You mean Jack in the Box?
Jack in the Box, sorry. Fuck, those names are way too similar. We also found out he was pissed that his arch nemesis was a clown.
Yeah, because he's like, you were my first choice, but, you know, what can I do?
Terrible.
Yeah, because they gave his origin, too. They gave his origin and the origin of the daughter. His origin was he wanted to be an actor, but they weren't impressed, so he turned to crime.
I'll show you drama.
It was very simple. And, and the daughter's origin was when he killed himself and she blamed Jack in the Box for killing her dad. He left him with all the bills and stuff.
Yeah,
the mom ended up in like a flop house and always blamed it on Jack in the Box for killing him. So the daughter grew up fucking hating Jack in the Box because she had a shit life and her mom had always told her it was all Jack in the Box's fault. So
yeah, she would watch the TV. She would watch Jack in the Box be a superhero. He's like, oh, it's all because of your fault. He's dead.
Yeah, so she didn't get good information from her mom. But you know what did her mom know?
Yeah, she found out the truth because of after the digging, and this caused her to want to kill herself. because I guess everything she believed was a lie.
Yeah, she fucking lit herself on fire.
Oops.
But she was saved by the one character, the one who was going to be a Cracker Jack, but instead he decided he wants to be a
Jack
doctor.
In the Box. Jack in the Box. Jack in the Box. Jack in the Box. He would have been Jack in the Box 3, but he hurt his leg. So he couldn't do it anymore. But yeah, he decided he wanted to be a doctor. We found that out in this issue, and he ended up saving her life. So decided, you know, maybe being a doctor, you know, I'm not saving the world, but I am saving people's lives. I could still make a difference.
But then there was also that instance where he's like, yeah, her body's going to heal just fine, but I feel like part of me saving the world, yeah, she's going to heal and get back on the street, but part of what's broken her is her brain. That's part of the reason why she let herself
out. Oh, and he thought maybe he'd be a psychiatrist.
Exactly.
Yeah. So maybe he wouldn't just be a doctor, but he did go into something to help people. So he's keeping the family tradition.
Yeah, it was kind of cool and convenient. Like they introduce this character and you don't know why. And then it kind of conveniently plays out into the main storyline.
In two issues, we got more development in two characters than we've had in seven issues of Squadron Supreme.
Burn.
Well done, Busiek. Well done. Showing them kids how it's done.
Take that, James Robinson.
I don't want to shit on Robinson. Poor guy. Hey, you fucking go read Starman. He was great.
His last Fantastic Four run wasn't all that great either.
Well, go read Starman. Cry for Justice is one of the worst things I've ever read in my entire life.
Didn't we read that?
No, we did not read Cry for Justice. Cry for Justice is the one where all the heroes acted like dicks and they killed Prometheus.
I'm saying, didn't you get us to read an issue of Starman?
Yeah, a self-contained issue of Starman.
It's a good book.
Yeah, you liked it.
Can't believe the same guy.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's been years. I don't know what happened to him.
From here, we're going to move to Clean Room, Issue 8, writer Gail Simone, art by John Davis Hunt. That's my favorite name to say. John Davis Hunt.
The big key of this issue was we found out that Chloe brought the monster in.
Yeah, the demon thingy.
Yeah, and we had found out that these beings, they possess people. And through history, they would be like... You know, since people thought they were demons, they would be, you know, exorcised, and sometimes it would work. With this guy, it actually did work. He had the evil exorcised out of him, so he was now like a somewhat good
demon
monster, and he ended up saving Astrid.
Yes, because apparently, when he possesses him, it's like super healing powers.
Yeah, so he went to Astrid.
And he didn't want to, by the way.
No, he didn't want to because, number one, she fucking hates them and wants to murder all of them. And he doesn't like that. And number two, she wears this this perfume that they find to be horribly smelling.
How absurd.
It's very smelly, so they had to wash it off her to get him to go in. He goes in and fixes it. And then Astrid wakes up, and her first move is, okay, burn this thing. Kill it. Gave no shits that it saved her. The artist of this book is very good.
We had some basically two scenes outside of the clean room. We see it's like a flashback of her and her rookies. You know, like I don't know how many years back it was, but they're in the middle of the desert, and she walks toward what seems to be the crash site, and the surgeon. You know, the one that the surgeon refers to in issue 7. But we don't get to see what happens, but we see her retrieve, like, this orb that is the central.
Glowing white orb.
It's central to the clean room.
Yeah. It might be what does whatever happen. I don't know, because they haven't explained everything. But she got the white orb. And they don't, the monsters don't really like the clean room for whatever reason.
We have a character here that was like a shooter that apparently claims to be her brother. And we also find out that her father was to some degree possessed or burdened by the demon people, so his claim that she killed her father is really interesting.
And they, by the way, they still have said they're not necessarily demons.
Yeah, we don't...
because she said throughout history,
yes,
they have been thought of as demons, but they're not, like... they're not necessarily demons. They might be aliens or whatever they are. They're scary looking monster things that possess people.
Yes.
That's what they do. They call it riding. They ride people.
I bet they do.
I'd like to ride Astrid, I'll tell you that much.
No. Hickory dickory dock.
No, but Chloe saved her.
And she thanked the demon by killing him.
Yeah, bitch. I told you, you're not supposed to like Astrid.
I thought she was a bit of a badass. Like, she understood who these demons were or whatever they are.
Yeah, but this one was good.
Yeah, he was all sad. He was like, oh, don't kill me. And he was helping her. He was like, this is the first time.
He saved her life.
Although I will say this of John Davis Hunt. The way he drew the demon from panel to panel was kind of weird. Cause in a couple of panels, he would look sad, remorseful, scared. And then there'd be a couple instances where he looks evil and he's doing that smile again.
That's cause that's what he looked like.
I know, but it's a little jarring. It's hard for you to have.
The coolest piece of art in this book was when she went over the hill and she saw the whatever the fuck it was. I don't know what that thing was, but it looked really cool.
I think it was a crash site that they mentioned a few issues ago.
Yeah, but it was like a giant fucking monster. It had like little spindly metal legs and...
That's probably the crash site.
Yeah, I know.
They live in the sky somewhere, so I guess that's...
Yeah, I'm just saying it was cool looking. That was all. Good for him. Good book.
Very much so. All right, now final Vertigo book is Lucifer issue 7. Writer, Comicless is doing that thing where it doesn't give me the writer and artist. You guys do your review while I quickly try to find this.
So the angels are now fighting?
It seems like it's a battle between the king, like heaven and hell, isn't it?
No, not really.
There's political drama.
Yes, there's political drama in heaven and hell. So we had the two different stories. The hell one was the guy we met in the last issue, Lucifer, and the Japanese deity's son.
Yes.
Sent a letter to Mazikeen, who's the current queen of hell, basically telling her, hey, we want to fight because I want my fucking throne. I'm Lucifer's kid. I'm the boss in this shit. And Mazikeen apparently, and we saw this before, she has stakes through her hands. She's not allowed to leave the throne of hell. And this is apparently because of some peace treaty they have where she's not allowed to leave. Although she says she would leave to go to war, so that's fine. But she's staked down there. And the kid's mom comes to see her and basically guarantees her victory.
Yeah, but you gotta do me.
Yeah, by appealing to her ego. They all call you Lucifer's lapdog and you're like a besotted young girl. And you know, all that shit trying to piss her off so she'll go along with her. And so we've got that going on. And then the heaven story was they go to see Metatron, who's
he deals with the troubling idea of a kind of like a philosophical troubling thoughts about the idea of a heaven with no God.
Well, because one of the things was they came to question him because they showed like people on Earth are like killing themselves because they know there's no God anymore. Like, we had another guy light himself on fire in this comic.
Seems to be motif.
Yeah, he's like, there's no God anymore. And then he just lights himself on fire. So apparently a lot of people are doing this, and it's a big problem. So the angels, they all come, like Michael comes to question him. And he revealed that, you know, they were sent out to kill Lucifer. But for some reason, they picked Gabriel to do it, and Gabriel was a fuck-up who was kicked out of heaven, so he didn't understand why he asked him. But, you know, he had to go recover that black sword, the one that hurt Lucifer, and he was going to go kill him, and he was pissed off that he got to do that. Well, he ended up getting killed with the black sword by apparently Raphael, another, not a Ninja Turtle, the angel.
Oh, can it be both?
who had peacock wings for some reason.
Go figure.
Yeah, he had different wings from everyone else. But he apparently killed them. That was the indication, at least. And the other thing that was going on was they had, like, there was, like, a little window where God would apparently, where the presence once was, because they call God the presence. And they look through it, and there's, like, this weird-looking cocoon thing. So, apparently, God is also an inhuman.
I'm waiting for that tie-in now.
Undergoing teragenesis? No, but God may be coming back, maybe, or there's a monster or something there. And Lucifer, again, he does not feature heavily in his own book.
Which is not a knock on the book, because especially the last issue, these are really good stories that they're telling.
No, this is a good story, and it's got a lot of interest. You've got the political moves on the heaven and hell side, and, you know, you've got a war brewing in hell. It's all very interesting. It's just odd that all we got of, in the last issue, Lucifer didn't appear at all. In this one, he was just kind of hanging out in his bar in Lux with his cat man, and he decided to go walk around the city.
It is a little jarring, because I'll read this book and be like, did I grab the right book? This is the same Lucifer we were reading before, right?
Yeah, it's odd, but it's a very interesting story, and it you can tell the writer has this planned out a long way.
And that writer is Holly Black.
Yeah, which is a good way to write, by the way, when you plan out a story long term. Mm-hmm. Thumbs up for this issue.
Very much so.
I want to see every issue ends, and I want to see where they're going next. So that's a good place to be.
Yes, and I'd be doing a huge disservice if I didn't mention the art as well. Stefan Hans.
Yes, the art in this book is very good. He didn't get as much to do in this issue, mm-hmm. but it was still all, you know, everything's well drawn, all good.
Speaking of someone who didn't do very much in an issue, let's open up with the DC talk with Batman issue 1, writer Tom King, art by David Finch.
Well, he put over Batman.
It was a nice little.
Batman need to be put over, right?
It was very action oriented.
But I thought this was better than the Rebirth issue.
Yes, much
and
so.
given it's coming out every 2 weeks, I understood why the story moved the way it did.
And he's obviously telling a very big story, so you could say this. There wasn't much to this issue, but like you said, it's going to be bi-monthly, and he's obviously telling a very big story. So to say this book isn't good would be a disservice to the book, because really it's an issue one of a very big story. So it's at the same time, I can't put over the book as well.
What's the very big story? I didn't even get that impression.
Yeah, I didn't get the impression there was a big story.
Well, there's obviously Gotham and Gotham Girl are going to wind up being a big deal.
Well, yeah, they did introduce two new heroes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that doesn't give me any indication of something very big.
We're going to get an issue where they explain what they are, and they're going to somehow tie into.
Again, I don't see the big.
They could be a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
I didn't get
that indication, I'm saying.
Well, but the key point at the end of this issue, I think, is what he's getting to, is Gotham has two new heroes that we know absolutely nothing about. And they're going to have to follow up on
They're going to have to be introduced, and then you're going to be injected in a couple of stories. And considering they're having this crossover, I think, in issue 7, either they're going to very quickly be done away with in issue 7, or they're going to be continually introduced in this book, because he's always going to do something with these characters. This isn't a one and done kind of thing. It's obviously going to go a couple issues.
The big action focus of this book was some terrorists, or at least some gangs, had acquired a surface-to-air missile, which they shot at a plane. And Batman, of course, is the only superhero in Gotham, so he had to go save the plane. And Batman does this by putting his, and this was what I liked about the story, because it put over how smart Batman is, instead of just putting over what a good fighter he is, which means King understands the strengths of the character. Mm-hmm. He flew up on his jetpack, and then he attached the jetpack thrusters to the plane, and he's reading off to Alfred, like, you know, getting the degrees of thrust they need to have at particular times so he can guide the plane through the city. And he's literally like it's a fucking horse. He's got like his his bat grappling deal wrapped around the plane, and he's like steering it.
Like Slim Pickings in, what's it, the movie with the bomb.
Oh, fuck,
Dr. Strangelove, there we go.
Dr. Strangelove, yeah. It wasn't quite like that.
The first thing I thought of when I saw him doing it, though.
When he's riding the plane. Yippee! Yeah, but he's steering the plane through, and Alfred's talking to him, and he's like, Bruce, you know you're gonna die, right? Like, the people will live.
Yeah, he says you'll save people in the city, and you'll save most of the people on the plane, but you're not gonna live.
And he asked him if his parents would think this was
a good death.
This was a good death, which is very sad, actually. And Alfred's like, he's not really, like, you tell Alfred's thinking, like, well, no death is a good death.
He basically said they'd be proud of him if he died.
But yeah, he told him they'd be proud of you if you die this way. But as the plane is about to crash into the water, killing Batman, what are their names?
Gotham and Gotham Girl.
Yeah, Gotham and... Or Gotham Boy? Gotham Man?
Just Gotham. He just called him Gotham, and then the girl was Gotham Girl.
Yeah.
Sexist.
Which fucking ridiculous name.
I think that's what they're going for.
He thought at first it was Superman, by the way.
Well, yeah, Clark? Because he actually, because Batman's not stupid, he tells Alfred, he's like, hey, put out a call to, the Justice League, especially, Clark and Hal. Because he reasoned they would be the best equipped to deal with this. And Alfred has to give him the bad news of every member of the Justice League is either in outer space or they're fighting monsters somewhere.
They didn't say it, but I'm sure there was that what?
Yeah, and Batman says, he's like, well, I don't need them. This is my city. I'll save it.
I bet Batman was thinking, and it wasn't explained in the book, but like, even Cyborg?
Yeah, like, Cyborg can't come help? He's not doing shit. I do think it's a little sad that Batman can't think of anyone outside of the Justice League. Like, you can't, there's a million superheroes in DC. You only know those? You can't call anyone else?
No, those are only
the
ones
that
are
over. It has to be the Justice League. The outsiders can't come help. Doom Patrol.
He'd rather die than have to ask them for help.
Well, see, you know, in the old DC, Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern, lived in Gotham. So he could have come helped out, but he doesn't exist yet because Johnny Thunder hasn't got him back.
Is that going to go into our next book, or do you want to talk all things Batman?
Let's talk about that other Batman book because I really liked it.
Yeah, as do I. I wasn't sure when I saw this and you listed it off. I was like, another Dark Knight Returns book, and he hasn't even finished his first book yet.
Yeah, but it was really fucking good. It's better than Dark Knight.
Yes, I agreed.
The book
yeah,
we're referring
like way
to
way better.
Yeah, the book we're referring to is Dark Knight Returns: The Last Crusade, Issue 1, writer Frank Miller, art by John Romita.
And this is a story. It did two things. It's leading into Batman's retirement because this is in the Dark Knight universe, which we got 100% confirmed in this that it's not. It's completely alternate reality. It's not, originally we thought Dark Knight was just different future. But this, because of the way they dealt with Jason Todd, it revealed this is just alternate reality story, which is fine. But
yeah, this issue is a aging Batman who's he's getting older. His body's and he's worried about the future because he's trying to groom Jason Todd to be the new Batman, and he's worried.
Yeah,
he's like you know he's not sure if he has the right temperament if he's. You know, he doesn't think straight, you know, how he plans things out. Batman gets his ass kicked a lot in this issue.
Okay, and, sorry. I had something going on there that was distracting.
Was it your wife?
No, that link you gave me to watch the new Japan show, I had the sound turned off and suddenly I heard very loud Roman Reigns music and very loud booing. So whatever that screaming site is, it decided to kick the sound back on.
Oh, that's very funny, though.
That was all.
Roman Reigns actively ruining our show, too.
Yeah, God.
Not content with just one show.
No, this was true to the Jason Todd character somewhat. Not the super violence level. That's more like a Damien thing. Mm-hmm. But Jason Todd was a dick.
That's why, like, they killed him, because nobody liked him.
That was why when they – and Fat Man, are you aware of why he died?
Because nobody liked him, right?
No, it was more than that. They voted.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah, they had people call in. There was one number for if they wanted him to live, and there was one if they wanted to die. And people voted that he wanted him dead.
Yeah, and it was – I mean, it was close, they did vote for him to die. He was not a well-loved character. Tim Drake came off much better because he was kind of a dick. Like, he became Batman because he stole the tires off the Batmobile.
Ooh, nice.
He was like a troubled youth, and Batman brought him in. He was always kind of a dick. So going through with that.
By the way, that was him after Crisis. Apparently, the pre-Crisis origin for him was similar to Dick Grayson.
Was it?
Yeah, he was well liked, and then it was once Crisis happened, he got the new origin. His dad was like a beat or something, and
because they probably wanted to differentiate him from Dick Grayson, which is fine. It's just it didn't work. People didn't like it, so you had that. But in this, he was much more unlikable. Like, you know, they're fighting normal dudes with no powers, and Batman's like kind of watching him, and he's absolutely beating the shit out of these guys. And Batman remarked that he's like, you know, he's doing what I taught him to do. He's trying to incapacitate with every blow, but he probably shouldn't be smiling while he's doing it. Because he sets up the real difference between him and Robin is he doesn't like fighting criminals. Batman does it because he thinks he has to. But Jason Todd, he really fucking wants to fight the criminals, and he wants to beat the shit out of them.
Alfred pointed out, like, you did like it when you were younger. He's like, yeah, but I was younger.
I don't think it was quite the same. Like, he really was taking a lot of joy in doing some extreme violence. But
by the way, when they voted to have him killed, people wanting him killed won over by 62 votes.
Yeah, so
and God bless you, 62 voters.
Hey, it worked out well. Tim Drake rocked. But yeah, so, you know, Joker gets arrested in this. But I mean, really the push of the issue was how violent Jason Todd is, how Batman should be retiring because he's getting older, but he doesn't really want to. And yeah,
the idea was he was going to be the hermit in the cave enjoying retirement, but helping out, Jason Todd. That was his plan.
Like Batman Beyond.
Yes, exactly like that.
except he's saying, you know, he's not ready yet. He might never be ready. And, you know, it's suggested to him that maybe it's not that he's not ready, but you're not ready to stop. And he basically said, no, I'm not ready to stop. That's true. But he's also not ready to take over.
And you have to imagine the truth somewhere in the middle, because obviously people that were telling him to retire were people like Alfred and Selina.
Why wouldn't he get Nightwing to be Batman?
That is a good question.
Maybe in this world he had a falling out or something?
Or he died?
No, because that was in Batman. When he was gonna die and they were talking about that new guy he had, and he's like, well, Dick can train him just as well as I can. So, yeah, and this maybe something happened. But we're getting how Jason Todd died in this world, which is very similar. He's getting the shit kicked out of him at Joker's direction, but Joker's apparently not going to kill him there. He's going to do worse things to him.
Butt stuff.
Yeah. Joker is very dark in this world. Which,
shocker.
Yeah, which makes sense, but like he's not cracking jokes and stuff. So it's a little more uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I think that's what they're going for, and it's cool. It's different.
Yeah, they are. But I mean, I really like this. I thought it flowed very well. It's not like retreading a lot of the territory that Dark Knight had, which the current Dark Knight, which, you know, I still enjoy. I mean, a lot of it's because I'm comparing it to Dark Knight Strikes Again, which is a fucking travesty. But this is doing something different. It's nice to have the slightly younger Batman back again and doing the stuff with Jason Todd and putting Joker over and all that. I want to see where this goes. I like it a lot so far. I hope they continue it.
As do I. All right, from here, let's move on to Superman issue 1, writer Peter J. Tomasi, art by Patrick Gleason.
Really, this is good too. Jonathan fucking burnt his cat alive.
Yeah, but you could tell he was really super upset. And,
he didn't do it on purpose.
He didn't want to really.
Yeah. Well, here's what happened. As apparently happens on farms, his cat is chasing a mouse. And he goes after the cat, and a fucking hawk swoops down and grabs the cat.
Oops.
And he's looking at it, and he's like, let him go! And he does the heat vision, but he doesn't really have a lot of experience with his powers, so he lets go full blast, and then we just see Burnt Kitty fall to the ground.
Aww.
Because he killed it, and he's really upset about this, but a little girl who just moved into the dairy farm across the way, she saw him.
Yes, she knows about his powers.
She knows about it, and he goes back home, and he doesn't
want
to talk about it.
Yeah, and he's also like, Dad, you're right. Maybe I'm not ready to play with my powers.
Well, yeah, because they needed to rebuild. They're gonna build a barn or something, and his dad's like, hey, are you ready to use your powers? Help me put this barn together. And he's like, yeah, I'm not really ready yet, Dad. And he's like, because Clark's a super cool dude, and he's like, okay, well, if you're not ready, that's fine.
So I'm not going to force you to do anything you don't want to.
But then he did scold him later at dinner when Jonathan is being a dick. He's like, if you don't have anything nice to say, you go up your room. He's such a fucking Kansas dad.
Aw, it's cute, though.
It is. But then that little girl comes over to introduce herself and everything, and Jonathan wouldn't even talk to her. And the parents are just like, oh.
They're cute, and they're the same age. They should hang out.
Yeah, you should be friends. Be nice. But we don't know how that's going to work. So this was basically getting over the family dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In Superman. And I mean,
you know what's funny? It's like he's entirely given up being a reporter because they just live on a farm and he just goes off.
Yeah, he's a farmer.
Yeah.
Well, there's also that the other Clark Kent that they haven't explained yet, but that was in Action Comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out about that. This book might focus more on the family stuff. And the clever thing about this is it's you don't need to introduce Superman as a character at all to anyone. Everybody understands Superman. Especially. Yeah, then this is the real Superman. So, like, everyone knows this Superman. So, yeah, do something with his son because we don't know that character yet. And he's going through different shit. So, that was good. This is a very enjoyable first issue.
By the end, at the end of the issue, Clark has, gets the Justice League show up in Kansas. And, Jonathan's, he saw me, he can hear because, he has special hearing. And I'm sure, the dad knows. And then at the end of it, he's like, you gotta come with us.
Yeah, and he didn't explain why, but I mean, is Batman and Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman is there with her sword and shield ready to fight because they reminded us in the bits of conversation Jonathan heard, they still don't know who the fuck he is. They know he's not their Superman.
Yes.
But he is a Superman.
It's a real Superman. And
yeah, they're trying to figure out who he is. And by the way, they're bringing back the Trinity book. Him, Wonder Woman, and I'm going to give it a shot because I like all these DC books. So I'll give it a shot. But I mean, it was,
Hey, speaking of liking DC books and something we've liked in the past, I'm looking at this week's books and we completely missed, the follow-up to Justice League issue 51.
No, I intentionally didn't pick that.
I'm curious why.
There's a rebirth.
Because there's going to be, the Hitch series is the new Justice League book.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to wait for that.
Okay.
Instead of finishing up the one we already had.
I just thought I was curious because we did in fact read that issue 50.
Yeah, I kind of want to start at number ones for this since it's fresh to us.
Okay. That's something that maybe I would have fought for, but I completely forgot. I didn't even look over it.
Yeah.
Okay, and to wrap up this week's books, Titans Rebirth, writer Dan Abnett, art by Brett Booth.
Oh, let me say real quick, I read Green Arrow.
Oh, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, it was good. That was all.
Yeah. In fact, that was sort of a last-minute thing because I got the two Green Lantern books confused. And Alec was there. He's like, I'd rather read Green Arrow.
It was a really good book. He lives with, he's not really dating, but he's sleeping with Black Canary, and, he has like his, I don't know if it's his daughter or his younger sister or whatever living with him. And, he still has Queen Industries. He's stationed in Seattle now, by the way, cause he's a big lib and that's where the Green Party comes from. That's why he's Green Arrow.
Not really, any lib diatribe in this issue though, which I'm kind of glad.
Well, there wasn't. No, there wasn't. But I mean, you know, that's the character and that's the way he should be. But you know, he's going through and he's looking at all this stuff, but he decides to go to his company, Queen Industries that he inherited from his father. And he's questioning the guy who's basically running the company for him. Like, hey, there's a lot of weird stuff going on with the money and like escrows.
Human trafficking.
Yeah. Well, that was an indication because they saved some people. And this happened in the Rebirth issue we didn't read. But there was human trafficking of homeless people going on in Seattle. And there was some of the people were kept in a Queen Industries tanker. So he wanted to ask about all this. And the guy's like, oh, I got an emergency right now, but I'll explain it all. It all makes sense. You know, Queen Industries is doing what's right for the world. And then the evil businessman walks away and he's like, it's time.
Execute Order 66.
And he sends, Shadow, I think her name was. She's an old character, to go kill him. But also, the young girl who is living with him, she's like, oh, hi, Mom. And she's trying to kill Green Arrow too, so it was a good cliffhanger for the end of the issue. I will read the next issue. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it didn't blow me away like the other DC books had, but it's still pretty good.
No, it wasn't as good as Superman or I liked it as much as I like Batman, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as Titans.
No, and the creative on Green Arrow before we quickly move on is Benjamin Percy is the writer and the art is by Otto Schmidt.
So now we got Titans Rebirth?
Mm-hmm.
Titans Rebirth is fucking great.
It ruled.
Okay, so Wally, first he comes back to, cause this is the Wally focus book. He comes back to Nightwing and as he's, you know, he calls him Dick and he doesn't think he's calling him a dick. He's just like, how do you know my name? And,
it's funny though.
And he wants to fight him cause he's in his crib. And, when Nightwing goes to punch him, like some like lightning shit shoots out. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, wait, Wally? And this makes him remember him. So he remembers everything that happened. And then, you know, Donna Troy and Arsenal and actually, I don't even know what the fuck their names are currently.
I believe it's still.
I think Garth is still Tempest. I don't think he's Aqualad. and they had fucking Lilith there and Lilith is. I mean, she's technically an old Teen Titans character, but she's not really one of the ones people give a shit about. Like, Donna Troy and Arsenal and Nightwing, yeah, but Lilith? Not really. I don't even know why they included her, but whatever, that's cool. She has a weird, fucked up character history, by the way. They've done a lot of weird shit with her. I don't know what her status was in the New 52, but the Titans all come to fight and he figures out, okay, I gotta let them touch me and then they'll all remember me. And so, you know, they, one of them would touch them and then they do like a one page flashback thing of something the characters did. And none of this was important shit. It was like them playing pranks on each other and stuff.
It was obviously a cherished memory and that's what made them remember.
Yeah. So they remembered and then they had the discussion that, hey, we lost 10 years. And somebody did this to us and we got to figure out who. And, you know, it could happen again. So we need to get on this soon.
And I'm wondering, is it the Speed Force? Cause obviously Wall has been unaffected by the New 52. I have to imagine he can undo that when he touches people.
That's what he guessed. He thought that it was the Speed Force doing something,
mm-hmm.
But you know, they didn't get confirmation on it. Cause he doesn't know. He just knows that, you know, by them touching him, he shoots his stuff out and then they remember. So we've got Barry, Donna Troy, Nightwing, Arsenal, Lilith. Was there anyone else on the team?
I believe that's it so far.
Yeah, they all know of the old DC. And no one else does.
They mentioned 10 years. Like, there's a 10-year.
Yeah, they mentioned the 10-year gap, and he said the 10-year gap, it took place in the time when we all would have formed relationships with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the time that was taken away from us. So, does it make sense that Titans would be the book that is most closely tied to their big overarching story?
If it has Wally, yes.
I guess, but that seems weird. Shouldn't it be Justice League?
But Wally isn't on that book. It makes sense for it to be the Teen Titans book, though.
But Barry knows, too, though, and he's on the Justice League.
True, that is a good point. I'm sure, well, the thing is, we also haven't had Justice League yet, so.
And yeah, good point.
You know what? This is just a rebirth issue. Who's to say that when we finally get Teen Titans issue one, they deal with entirely different stuff?
Well, they did kind of set up that we need to figure out what's going on as the big thrust of this issue. So, I don't know. We'll see. This is really, really good, though.
Yes.
DC is firing on all cylinders.
Well, Marvel's kind of...
Well, yeah, if you compare it to Marvel, it's still much better. But I think, yeah, standing on their own merit, these are good books.
Oh, yeah, very much so. All right. From there, we're going to talk next week's books. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you. All right, what do we have for next week's books?
Archie.
What publisher is that?
Archie.
I know, I'm just fucking with you. Archie Comics, technically. okay, we have Action Comics 958.
Yeah.
Aquaman number one.
I can't believe we're reading Aquaman.
It's fucking good, dude.
it's
good. Do we...
Flash
number one?
Oh.
It's not Wally, but I still want to try it.
Mm-hmm. Justice League? I know we skipped over the last one, but...
We didn't read it this week.
Okay, skip over.
Oh, wait, it's... Okay, this doesn't even make any sense. A Titans Rebirth number one prelude.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't make any sense, because we already read Titans number one.
Okay, how about this? I'll read it, and I'll let you guys know if it's important.
Yeah, and I still won't read it, but that's okay. And Wonder Woman number one.
I'll leave it off the list, though.
That is DC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, looking down, moving down.
Black Road.
Black Road number three. Well, they'll be killing lots of people in that book.
I look forward to not reading that book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. Well, you two read it, so that's enough for a full review.
Okay, fair enough.
It's looking like a light week.
We're not reading Sam Wilson anymore because it's getting canceled.
The onslaught of Marvel books, I bet it's coming.
I demand we read Civil War 2, Choosing Sides.
You demand!
Demand.
And I'm looking at the description here.
Because in Civil War 1, they had a series called Frontline, mm-hmm. and Frontline was pretty good.
Ah, that's your justification for reading it.
Yes. So, Doctor Strange, number 9.
Got that.
Mighty Thor,
number 8.
Yeah.
Miss Marvel, number 8. Nighthawk, number 2. Scarlet Witch, number 7. Totally Awesome Hulk 7.
Oh, and then we stopped reading that book.
Did we? Okay, never mind
that. You want to pick that up again?
No, it's fine. Ultimates number 8. Uncanny Avengers number 10.
Oh, I'm so pumped for that.
Are you guys still reading Divinity?
Yes, very much so.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it was great.
Divinity 2 number 3 and Rye 14.
I think you skipped over Web Warriors.
No, we dropped
it. We stopped reading that.
Oh.
You can still read it, dude.
That's true, and I may do a lot.
I'm still gonna read Totally Awesome Hulk.
Warriors and Totally Awesome Hulk as possible. I'm not gonna put it on the list, but I'm just putting this on my personal list.
So what's
it has a giant Spider-Man robot, by the way.
Yeah, that comes out too, and I know this is gonna have Dave doing backflips. 16 books.
That's good.
And I can already, well actually I'm looking at this list right now. Can't think of any
Wait, we have to read Totally Awesome Hulk.
How come?
Bruce Banner's fate during the 8-month gap post Secret Wars is revealed.
Ooh.
We have to read that.
Okay, we probably should, since it's leading to whatever the hell that's going to happen to him in Civil War.
Yeah.
We won't read Justice League that'll set up something in the future, but we'll read Totally Awesome Hulk.
Justice League is getting a number one.
Yeah, but it's obviously... Yeah. Well, I'm going to read it and let you guys know if anything's important. Yeah,
and we still don't know what happened to Banner. Like, there wasn't really much of a mystery in... Because that Justice League, it said it took place when the Justice League first formed, and it was like Dick Grayson getting introduced to the other Titans. Like, there was no question about that.
All right. I think that's going to do it for next week's show, then. We have 17 books. Not bad.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's show, then. Sorry, it was just awkward how nobody said anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, and as always, see you guys next week. Adios.